receive the human form, then why waste our life? Animals also enjoy all day. That's what they do. If you see the monkeys, they just jump from one tree to the next, doing mischief. They play around, and they just engage in sense gratification. So this is not the function of human life. And Krishna is speaking these very strong words, condemning the Vedas themselves, you know, although the Vedas are non-different from Krishna. So we understand the scope is that, as we know, there are different sections in the Vedas, and this is very important to understand. There are different sections, and the different sections are meant for different people. And it's the same in Bhagavad Gita. Some people, when they read Bhagavad Gita, they conclude that, you know, if you read just one part of one chapter somewhere, you may conclude that you should worship the demigods. Or you may conclude that you should do your duty. You know, if you happen to just read one piece here or there, you can misunderstand even the Bhagavad Gita. So we have to have an overall knowledge of the Vedas. And Srila Prabhupada always said that the Vedas, they are a whole. They are actually a consistent whole. The scholars nowadays, the mundane scholars in the Western world, they say, no, these are all scattered things written at different times by different authors, and they have nothing to do with each other. But this is not what Krishna explains. They very much are related to each other. So, Nistraya Gunya, you should rise beyond nirdvandva, beyond dvandva. There is a stage beyond duality. So what is this dvandva? Dvandva means duality. We heard this in 2.14. Who remembers 2.14? Yes? You should be equipoised in the face of duality. Matras pashas tu kanteya shitosna sukha dukada. So there will be summer, there will be winter, there will be happiness, there will be distress. This is the dvandva of the material world. If you want to enjoy, you will have to suffer. No one wants to suffer, but it happens too. So the two are mixed. The happiness and the distress, they cannot be extricated. They come together. In order to enjoy, we need a material body. And the material body means suffering. So you cannot separate the two in this world. That is the dvandva. Therefore, we should try to find something beyond that. And it will be by working with our intelligence fixed on the Supreme. So, if we do that, then we will become situated in a transcendental state. Free from ideas of gain and protection. Meaning we are always anxious to gain something, and once we have it, we are always scared to lose it. This is the material condition. This is the psychology of the karmi. I don't have, I want, I cry, I want. Once I have it, I'm afraid to lose it. So this is not a very happy state of existence. So why this karmakanda section is there? We understand it's to attract the sense gratifiers. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada gives an analogy for these karmakanda practices. This is in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.46. Prabhupada says, men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas. We have heard that, right? Which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets. Now, the fruitive results promised in the Vedic literature are meant to stimulate a materialistic person. Understand? Prabhupada explains very nicely. The promises that are there in the Karma Kanda section, you will get this, you will get that. If you just do this yagya, you will get this, this and that. It is meant to stimulate a materialistic person. But ultimately, by doing the yagyas and getting the result, this will lead them to have faith in the Vedic injunctions. The example is given that a child may be offered candy-covered medicine. When a child is sick, you want to bring him back to health. But usually medicine is bitter, not so good, or not tasty at all. And so the children, most of the time, they don't want to take medicine. So what do the does the doctor do? Injection. Sanchari really has a good one for each class. Thank you very much. So injection, that's a bad Indian doctor. You hold the child by four people and no, this is not what the Ayurveda is going to do. The Ayurveda is going to give a candy-covered medicine. It will put sugar around the medicine. Some honey, some nice candy, some chocolate, right? He'll put something around it. And the child becomes very much enthusiastic to take the medicine because of the candy. So what is the analogy here? What is the candy? What is the medicine?
The results of the karma condensation.
Yes. The result, the enjoyment which is promised, that's the candy part. And what is the medicine? The what?
The
yagyas. Yes. The yagyas, the regulations, that is the medicine. If you just tell them, you know, you're sick. You big bogey, you're sick. Just do this yagya, just do. They won't do it. Why they should do it? They won't even believe they are sick. When we go to the people for preaching, we tell them, you know, they don't believe that there's something wrong with them, they're fine. As Prabhupada said, in the beginning of the movement, he wrote a pamphlet saying, who's crazy? Because the devotees, they go to preach and they see all this nonsense, people going to hell through their activities. So the devotees think, these people are crazy. But when they explain the philosophy to the people, those people think, these people are crazy. So who is crazy? So the materialists who have absolutely no clue about the soul and the existence of the soul, they are not ready to restrain themselves. Why should I restrain myself? You know, the more enjoyment, the better. But if there is more enjoyment than required, then there is vikarma. And the result is hell. Therefore, this enjoyment has to be restrained so that the passion goes down, the ignorance goes down, and the goodness emerges, and the human being can actually function as a human being. So therefore, the Vedas, they present the candy. You will go to heaven. You will get this, that, so much enjoyment. You will remain young. You'll do this, this and that. That's the candy. And the medicine is what they actually have to do. You have to regulate your senses. You have to do some vrata. You have to do some fasting, some mona, some tapasya, some yagya. And because of the candy, they are ready. They think, they meditate on the future enjoyment. So Prabhupada said, the child becomes enthusiastic to take the medicine because of the candy coating, whereas a mature person will be enthusiastic to take the medicine itself, knowing that such medicine is meant for his real self-interest. But those who are not intelligent, who are bewildered by material energy, we will have to give them some in a hidden way. So this is what the Karma Kanda section does. But Krishna discourages this Karma Kanda, because in any case it is useless. It just keeps the people within the material world. They produce punya, they go to heaven, and then they fall down and up and down. We will see at some point, Prabhupada calls it the Ferris wheel. You know the Ferris wheel? It is in the fair, when you go to a fair. There's a big wheel, huge, 50 meters high. And then you sit. There are some little seats there. You sit, and then it goes up. Up, 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 up. And as long as it goes up, you feel like, wow, it goes up. You feel good. It's going up, up. You can see more and more things and all. And then you arrive at the top, and you feel like, wow, I am at the top. Feels really good. And it stops there for 2 seconds. And then suddenly it starts going down, and your stomach stays up, and the thing goes down, and and you have to come down. So this is the Ferris wheel. So this is very much discouraged, because it is useless. It just brings us back to this world again and again. So this is not what is enjoined here. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, in his purport, he explains that nishtraigunya, it means the study, you should study the Upanishads and work according to the instructions of the Upanishads. Prabhupada, that he says, when the Karmakanda chapter are finished, then the chance for spiritual realization is offered in the form of the Upanishads, which are part of different Vedas, as the Bhagavad Gita is part of the fifth Veda, namely the Mahabharata. The Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. So when we speak of the progressive Vedic path, which goes from Vikarma to Karma to Karma Yoga, and moving on to Jnana, Ashtanga, up, 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 so for those who follow that path, they go from the Karmakanda scriptures and regulations to the study of the Upanishads. But Srila Prabhupada concludes, the transcendental position is achieved in full Krishna consciousness. So instead of going through that path and studying the Upanishads, for us one is enough. Which one? Isha Upanishad. That's enough for us. We don't need more. We can directly practice Krishna consciousness. And that will be enough, if we can directly practice Krishna consciousness. This is explained by Prabhupada here. Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj says that anything material cannot be the absolute truth, for the absolute truth is on the spiritual platform. This is also confirmed by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, where he says, Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nishtraigunya Bhavarjuna. The Vedas deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. To act on the material platform, even if one's activities are sanctioned by the Vedas, is not the ultimate goal of life. The ultimate goal of life is to stay on the spiritual platform, fully surrendered to the Paramapurusha, the Supreme Person. So it's not enough to just follow the Vedas. You should know, we will hear further, that there is a purpose. This is the object of the human mission, to rise to the transcendental platform. In summary, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies and injunctions are not to be discounted. They are meant to be promoted to the spiritual. They are means of being promoted to the spiritual platform. But if one does not come to the spiritual platform, the Vedic ceremonies are simply a waste of time. So that we can apply, of course, here to the Karmakanda, but we should also be careful to apply this even in our practice of Krishna consciousness. We have so many routines that we follow. We have so many external aspects of Krishna consciousness that we follow. And we should be careful to see whether we are actually making progress, whether we are actually getting some benefit from all the routines. Because if we are not, then it means that we are missing something. And maybe the attitude is wrong. There's something wrong because it is not simply by doing the rituals that we are going to achieve the goal. The goal has to be fixed in the mind and we have to act for the right purpose. Otherwise we will not achieve what we are seeking. So Krishna continues. Yavanartha udapane sarvata samplutodake tavan sarveshu bhuteshu brahmanyasya vijanataha. Before I read the translation, I forgot something with the previous verse, is that this verse is considered to contribute to defeating destruction of the dynasty. There is another verse which we will find further in the third canto. But this verse also, in what way does it destroy destruction of the dynasty? Yes?
The practices that Arjun was mentioning was all Karmakanda, as Krishna is saying. And he's telling him that you guys about those. You don't need to worry about those practices.
Right. Because most of the practices which are carried down through the Kul Parampara, this is what they are. Just things to get to protect oneself from suffering and maximize the enjoyment. Most of it is lower dharma. Most of it is that, what goes on in the families. Unless it is a family of Vaishnavas that are highly involved, a family of transcendentalists that are highly involved in consciousness. Otherwise, this is what goes on in the families. So Krishna is saying, what is the use? You tell me you don't want to destroy, you know, all these dharma, you don't want to destroy all these family traditions, but what are they? This is what you are talking about. And I'm talking of my mission. That I have come here to establish Parodharma, the supreme dharma of serving the Supreme Lord. So who cares about all these things? They are not the ultimate. They have a purpose, but they are not the ultimate. So now this verse 46, Yavanata Udapane Sarvata Samputodake Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu Brahmanasya Vijanataha. It is an analogy, an image Krishna is giving to explain the essential point of understanding the purpose of action. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So Krishna here is definitely pointing at this Brahmanasya Vijanata, which means he's pointing at Brahma Jigyasa. One must know the purpose of the Vedas. And one should not just be attached to the rituals and to all the things that are the yagyas that are prescribed there and the tapasyas that are prescribed there. We should know why these yagyas, why this tapasya, why these regulations, where am I supposed to reach by doing all these things. So this is very important. So he gives this analogy. There is a great reservoir of water and there is a small well. This is an analogy that you can understand if you visit Indian villages. If you go to Rajasthan or you go to, in Rajasthan, I don't know if they will have big reservoirs of water, but you go, they have wells for sure. If you go in the villages, so what you will see in India is that wherever, in fact, there is no big reservoir of water, people drill holes and they take the water from the wells. So you will see in one village that there will be many wells. Why there will be many wells? Each one has a different purpose. So there is a well you will see where people go and bathe. They never do anything else there. They just bathe. There will be a well where they take drinking water and that's it. There will be some wells where they bring the animals. There will be some wells for washing the clothes. There will be, according to the Varnashram system, there may be wells which are reserved for the Brahmins. And there will be wells which are like the Chandalas, the lower class people. They are not allowed to come near the Brahmins' wells because they have different habits. So in that way, many, many purposes, many wells. And in another place you will find that there is a big reservoir of water. So what happens when there is a big reservoir of water? Everybody goes there. Everyone goes there. In one place they are washing the clothes. In one place the buffaloes are playing in the water. In another place, you know, the Brahmins are taking their snan. In another place they are this, that, that. But it's all their desires, all their needs are fulfilled by one big expanse of water. So what is the analogy like here? What is the reservoir of water here? And what is the well? What Krishna can offer and what the Vedas can offer. Oh yeah, that's not bad, yeah? Yeah? Yes? So Krishna can offer, so what Krishna can offer is what?
The Vedas are like the wells which are serving...
Sorry, can you repeat?
The Vedas are like the wells which are serving just one purpose. Whereas the reservoir is serving the whole purpose. So if you understand the main reason behind it, everything is served. So if you understand the reason of the Vedas, then the entire everything will be served, not one particular aspect or one particular need.
Okay, we are going in the right direction.
Wells can be the demigods and the reservoir is Krishna.
So see,
yeah, this is all connected, yes. So she says that the wells are the demigods.
Because you have to go to different demigods for different purpose.
It's something like this. It's the demigods and all the rituals. All the karmakandi rituals, they are compared to different wells. Each desire has one different ritual, one different devata to worship. The rituals are attached to different devatas, so it's correct. So each... The well is like here. You want to marry somebody, so you go do this puja. You want to be free from sickness, you go to that puja. You want to acquire money, you go to this puja. So different wells are the different rituals and the different instructions of Karmakanda. And what is the reservoir? It's Krishna. Devotional service. Yes. It's devotional service. It's Krishna. If you worship Krishna, then you don't have to go to many places. He can give everything. And he can actually serve the real purpose. So the purpose is to know the Vedas, and the reservoir is, the great reservoir is Krishna. That's why they say akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradi. Whatever you want, you just go to Krishna. So in one place you can satisfy all the desires, and in one place you can achieve perfection. Whereas if you go to this Karmakanda, it's like the wells, and you will have to spend all your life running from one well to the next. And while you are taking bath, you may be thirsty, but you can't drink the water. And while you are drinking, you remember you haven't taken bath, but you can't take bath now. So Krishna explains that the rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the Karmakanda division of the Vedic literature are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. 15:15. Who knows that verse? Vedaischa salver aham eva vedyaha. The purpose of studying the Vedas is to know Lord Krishna. So one who knows this purpose and who knows Lord Krishna, well, he has already achieved perfection. So it is not intelligent, it is not properly explained that not only it's not intelligent in general, therefore it is intelligent to give up all these endeavors for material sense gratification, which will not give us perfection. And we should engage in yoga. But not only in general, at all times, because these things exist at all times, not only at all times it is preferable to engage in yoga rather than in sense gratification, but especially in this age of Kali. In this age of Kali, not only it's intelligent, but it is necessary. In this age of Kali, these Karmakanda rituals cannot be performed properly. Prabhupada explains that it is not possible for the common man in this age to follow all the rules and regulations of the Vedic rituals, nor is it possible to study all of the Vedanta and the Upanishads thoroughly. It requires much time, energy, knowledge, and resources to execute the purposes of the Vedas. This is hardly possible in this age. The best purpose of Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord. So this will be Prabhupada's preaching throughout the Bhagavad Gita. That instead of taking up this yoga, that karma, that this, that. Prabhupada, the verse is specifically condemning karma. But Prabhupada says, not only karma is condemned, everything else is condemned. Karma yoga is condemned, Dhyan yoga is condemned, Ashtanga yoga is condemned, everything is condemned. Just chant the holy name. Because in the age of Kali, we cannot perform those Karmakanda things. Why can't we perform them? Everything is adulterated, that's true. The dravya, the paraphernalia for performing the yagyas is not pure. We can hardly find anything that's pure. sugar is mixed with some non-vegetarian things, and the ghee is made from who knows what, from the slaughterhouse, and nothing. It's not possible. You think you are offering swaha, some buffalo ghee, pure buffalo ghee, but Vishnu doesn't eat buffalo ghee. He eats cow ghee, the ghee that comes from the cow. And it's not the cow that has been tortured and sent to the slaughterhouse, whose baby has been stolen, or who in old age has been sent to the slaughterhouse. It's not that ghee that he takes. He doesn't take that ghee. He takes the ghee that is made from the milk of protected cows. So it is not possible. And what else is not there besides the paraphernalia?
The Brahmins
are not there. You can see in India, it's a very sad situation when you see many of the Brahminical families, which we must still respect because somehow they are Brahmins, but they don't perform, they don't have the character of Brahmins, and they are not real Brahmins. So they are not qualified to do the yagyas, because they do not live in purity. And what else is not there?
For that Brahmins, Jain Maharaj was telling us that it was marriage of somebody, and the Brahmana quoted the verses which were used for sannyas initiation.
I was spaced out. Yes, so this is what happens with the Brahmins. They mix up the mantras.
They only know so many, so they have to.
That was okay. The problem is if they recite the marriage mantras at the sannyas initiation. Yeah, so complicated. And what else is not there? The knowledge of the Vedas, and the Vedas themselves. Most of the Veda, the Vedic mantras, have been destroyed at the time of the Mughals' invasions and then the British rule. They have destroyed whatever they could find in the temples. It's burnt, it's gone. Only some people are still trying through the method of being a Shrutida, they recite some things in some schools, you know, without having the paper, because it was like this before. But most of the mantras have been lost. So even if you want to follow that method of elevation, the gradual path of elevation, it is not really possible. So the best purpose is served by chanting Hare Krishna. The best purpose of Vedanta philosophy is served by inoffensive chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. This is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. So everything in the Vedas is actually meant to bring us to this point, to surrender to Krishna in devotion.
Karmanyevadikaraste ma phalesho kadachana ma karma phala hetur bhur ma te sangostva karmani.
Now, Krishna is going to explain Arjuna how he wants him to act. We know that ultimately we should serve Krishna. But at this stage of Krishna's teaching and the state of mind that Arjuna is in, he is not ready for full surrender. He's not ready for that. So therefore, after having explained all this perfection of Buddhi Yoga, by which one actually rises, you know, or is situated in Buddhi Yoga beyond the modes of nature, Krishna is going to explain to Arjuna this Nishkam Karma Yoga, or action without desiring the fruit of the activities. So Krishna is giving him here, because he is a Kshatriya and he is a Grihastha also, so he has to engage in his duty in karma. So he is explaining this, Nishkam Karma Yoga. This will go from 47 to 49. So Krishna says, now listen, it's a tricky verse, this one. He gives him, this is your adhikar. You know, saying these are, it is a law actually. He's stating a law. He said, you have, this is your right. You have the right to do this. And you are not allowed to do this, this, this and that. Huh? So what is our adhikar? What is Arjuna's adhikar? You have a right to perform your prescribed duty. Hmm? So it means according to Varna and Ashram, there are duties. So you have the right, Arjuna, to perform your duty. Arjuna's getting, wow, nice. I have the right to perform my duty. Everybody likes to have rights. Hmm? So, and Srila Prabhupada will explain in the purport what different types of duties are there. Now, but then he says other thing, this is where you have no adhikar. What you cannot get, what you cannot do. So what is it? But you are not entitled to the fruits of action. So this is the rules of the game for a Nishkam Karma Yogi. You are not entitled to the fruits of action. Wow, this is a little tough, you know. You work hard and you can't get the fruit. Huh? You plant so many things in the garden and when the time comes to pick them and take advantage, you say, no, this is not for you. Oh, hey. At least could I get a good reputation for having planted a garden, you know, for the benefit of others? Krishna says, no, never consider yourself the cause of the result of your activities. Not only you can't get the fruit, but you can also not say, I did it. It's me. I did it. And we all like that, you know. We are very attached to this. Whenever we do something, somebody asks, oh, such a nice thing. Yeah, I did it. So this is a disease that we take the credit. We take the credit. And because we take the credit, then we are responsible for it. And if there is any mistake in it, it's our mistake. So Krishna says, perform your duty, but no fruit to be enjoyed, and you can't claim that you have done it. Do not consider yourself the cause of the result of your activities. So now Arjuna, what he said, so why should I do it then? Right? That's the next question. Why should I do something? I can't enjoy it. I can't even say that I did it. You know, I'm not the cause. Somebody else is going to take the credit. Why should I do it? So expecting that some people might think like this, so Krishna is giving the last portion of the rules of the game of Nishkam Karma Yoga, which is never be attached to not doing your duty. Means you have to do it. If you don't become attached not to do your duty. No, you should be attached to doing your duty. You should do your duty even though there is no fruit and there is no credit given. And if you become attached to not doing your duty, then what happens? Pa-pa. Then there will be a bad reaction. So these are the rules of the game. Who's ready to play? I must say that devotional service looks a little bit more attractive. But many of these things are included in the spirit of devotional service. We are not supposed to serve for the fruit. We are not supposed to take the credit. We know we are supposed to be instruments. So this is what he explains. Then Prabhupada explains there are three considerations here, and we are going to hear much more about that later. There are three kinds of karma. Could you recognize this? Prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. What does this stand for? Karma, vikarma, and akarma. And so there are three kinds of things here. And now we are talking of the karma yoga is made up of these prescribed duties and sometimes also these it's made up of prescribed duties. And then in the prescribed duties, there are different types. Prabhupada has given three types. As far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fitted into three subdivisions, namely routine work, emergency work, and desired activities. In Sanskrit, this is called nitya karma, which is routine work, which in general means this is the regular activities that people perform in their varnas and ashrams. Regular activities according to their natures, according to their ashram. So there are routine activities. Someone who is a vanaprastha doesn't have the same duties as a grihastha. So these are the routine, they have different routines. And then there is there is emergency work. So what is this emergency work? This is usually called naimittika. Naimittika karma. These are duties, as the word in English says, emergency, which can refer to two things. Emergency work can be some kind of sanskaras, rituals that do not occur on daily basis. Like, for example, you have the shraddh, you know, when you do the worship of the forefathers. So that's not a routine. It's not a routine. It happens, you know, it's exceptional whenever somebody dies. So there are things like this which are not routine. And out of this emergency work, also sometimes there is work that one is forced under certain conditions. Under certain conditions, one may be forced to do something which is not usually one's duty. Under some economical strain or some other conditions. For example, one may be in a specific ashram and suddenly have to, for one day or something, do the duties of another ashram. Or one may be in a specific varna and due to some circumstances may have to adopt the duties of another varna. And these things are regulated in the Shastra. Who can change, which Varna can do the work of another Varna under certain circumstances. And then there are desired activities, which is called kamya, kamya karma. So the kamya karma, it's some kind of optional work. They are not duties like which are obligatory, but it's according to one's desire. People have some desire. So to fulfill that desire, they are going to do some specific yagyas, some specific types of tapasya, just to fulfill their particular desires. So within these kamya karma, of course, there are two types, because some are born from material desires and some are born from spiritual desires. So of course, the best path is to cultivate spiritual desires and to add spiritual activities to one's routine. Add spiritual activities, add devotional service to the routine work. But in whatever kind of work we are doing, whether it is routine work, whether it is emergency work, or whether it is desired work, what is the rule? Is this, that you have the right to do your duty, but you should not be attached to the fruit. Not be attached to the fruit. So, one who is attached to the result of his work is also the cause of the action. Thus he is the enjoyer or sufferer of the result of such actions. This is a very important concept for us to learn. That if we work for in a self-centered way, if we work for the fruit, then we become responsible and we take the reaction of the work. And this includes sometimes good reactions, sometimes bad reactions, and it involves prolonging our stay in the material world. So in fact, it's never good. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage, Srila Prabhupada explains. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. And inaction is sinful. So Prabhupada connects this with Arjuna, that he didn't want to fight. So this was abandoning his duty.
This desired activities described duty. Like how one can maintain like this attitude of right to do at duty but not to be attached to the fruit by this. You know, if somebody is desiring, you know, and doing some yajna or desiring to get something.
Well, those that are born of material desires, they. There is always a sense of, if they are born of material desires, they don't fit under this. If they are born from material desires, that you do the yagyas for, you do it obviously for the fruit, so it doesn't fit into this. But if it's out of a spiritual desire, then you do it for a higher purpose. So it's a bit different.
So it doesn't come to describe
If you do it for with material desires, yes.
But the first line we mentioned that it actually for the Aparama, and because Prabhupada gives
these activities, prescribed duties and inaction.
Hmm.
I would say it would be karma or karma.
Hmm.
But then the last line, when we would think that action is sinful.
Well, there are different ways to see this, but yes, inaction in the end comes under sinful activity in the sense that you don't do your duty, so it's a fault. It's a fault. Inactivity is sinful. Yeah. What is your confusion exactly? Prescribed duty, capricious work, and inaction.
Yeah, and we said that was our karma,
inaction. Yeah, well, there are two meanings of akarma, and we will see that later, that akarma, one thing is inaction, means you don't do anything. There is karma, and a means no. Karma, akarma, you do nothing. So, Prabhupada now is qualifying this, that this inaction is sinful in the sense of giving up one's duty. But akarma also refers to the non-activities like performed by the jnana yogis and all that. They follow the path of akarma. They stop all their duties and so on. It's a specific path that they follow, the path of non-action. So in their case, it's not sinful. In their case, it's not sinful. But it depends whether one is ready to do this kind of thing, to follow the path of jnana. And, it has to be people who are ready, first of all, to give up the grihastha ashram. It can't be adopted by those who are in the grihastha ashram. All the jnanis, they are out of the grihastha ashram. And akarma, the other meaning of akarma, is work which does not bring reactions. So in that sense, there are three types of work, you know, the prescribed duties, which is doing your duty, and the not doing your duty. And here doing your duty means in terms of karma, it's duties which bring positive reactions. Capricious work is the vikarma, which will bring negative reactions. And akarma is the buddhi yoga or the karma yoga. This is what Krishna is trying to explain, that this work here will be akarma. This karma nyeva dikaraste and all this, it is not going to bring reactions. So he's explaining that. And because he said in the end, never be attached to not doing your duty, you should not misunderstand akarma to mean inaction. That's what it means. Akarma means that which doesn't bring reactions. It doesn't mean inaction. Got it? Because in the end he said, do not be attached to not doing your duty. Means you should not go into inaction just because you're not going to get the fruit, you're not going to get the credit. Now you will say, oh, then I won't do it. He says, no, that is not the way. You have to do it. So you should not do be inactive, because that is sinful. And the real meaning of akarma, when you contrast it with the other two, it means work that doesn't bring reaction. And this is the Nishkam Karma Yoga. Somebody else had a question? You have?
Same
question. So is it clear? Sorry?
In this sloka, in this case, the meaning is translation is word for word. Not doing this, that is.
Yeah. in not doing prescribed duties. Never be attached. Sangha astu akarmani. You should not be attached to not doing your duty. That means remain inactive. So you should not be attached. You should not be just neglect and just do nothing. You have to do something. And when you do it, when you do something, this is the spirit. There should be no attachment to the food. Forty-eight. Yogastha kuru karmani sangam chaktva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo samobhutva samatvam yoga uchyate. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Equanimity means that the mind should be peaceful. There should not be any hankering for the results. So there shouldn't be attachment. Attachments can be positive or they can be negative. Prabhupada was explaining that. We are attached to success and we are detached from failure. Something we want, something we don't want, and usually when we act, this is always the background. I want, I don't want, I want, I don't want. So we should abandon this attachment to success or failure and simply act out of duty. But you can see here there is a difference from what we heard before in the Karma Kanda section. People would do their duty with the idea of getting the fruit. But here we are talking of do your duty. And there is no, you must not enjoy the fruit. And if you do like this, then there will be yoga. Because ultimately there is a higher purpose when we do that. It is understood that if you act in a nishkam bhav, not desiring the result, there is still a purpose. But the purpose is not your own sense gratification. The purpose is the achievement of a higher consciousness. Krishna tells Arjuna that he should act in yoga. And what is that yoga? It means to concentrate the mind and Prabhupada act this on the Supreme, upon the Supreme, by controlling the ever disturbing senses. So this is in general yoga. It means that you have to control the mind. We will see this in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that the aim of Ashtanga Yoga is to control the mind. Because it's when the mind is controlled and becomes still, equanimity, as it says here, it's called samatvam. Samatvam. So when the mind is peaceful only, then we can perceive the Supreme. We can come to a higher platform of consciousness. As long as the mind is disturbed by I want this, I want that, yesterday, tomorrow, as long as these things are in the mind, and constant desires and attractions and repulsions, then there is no transcendental experience. So yoga means that we achieve a platform where the mind is completely still. So Srila Prabhupada naturally in his purport, that is his mood and mission, that he says that the topmost samadhi, fixedness of the mind is achieved, it actually means to follow Krishna's dictation. This is the topmost yoga. So this is bhakti yoga. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. The following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga, and this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. So this is topmost. The karma yogi, it's an initial agreement to follow Krishna indirectly by doing the karmas and all. But ultimately, the real communion with the Supreme, this happens when we actually ask Krishna, what do you want me to do? And he directly instructs through the spiritual master. The other day we were talking of this growing the mangoes, and growing the mangoes for Krishna and this and that. But when there is a time when we actually ask Krishna, so what do you want me to do? And if he says, well, I don't want you to grow mangoes. Either he will say, I want you to grow avocados. Or he will say, you know, I want you to distribute books. And I said, oh, but you know, I like growing mangoes. Yeah, but I like you to distribute books. I like to enlighten the people. So this is the ultimate. If we want our mind to be fixed in samadhi, we should ask Krishna what you want me to do and follow the order. So Prabhupada explains. So Prabhupada says, if you have to learn how to read Prabhupada's purports, and there is a way, all acharyas, they have a certain spirit when they write. And Prabhupada, when he writes, sometimes he doesn't say, okay, here I'm talking about devotional service, and here I'm talking about karma. He doesn't say it. You have to learn to read Prabhupada. So in this purport, you see, Prabhupada explains that Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. But then in the last paragraph, he is actually indicating what, on which level he is being instructed now. He says, Arjuna is a Kshatriya. He doesn't say, Arjuna is Krishna's servant. He says, Arjuna is a Kshatriya. So now he's talking of the Varnashram. And as such, he's participating in the Varnashram Dharma institution. It is said in the Vishnu Puran that in the Varnashram Dharma, the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu. So there are two ways to serve the Lord. One is direct and one is indirect. Devotional service is to follow the direct order of the Lord. I want you to distribute books. And the Varnashram Dharma means, I am a Kshatriya. I don't know about this book distribution. I fight. So Krishna says, okay, fight for me. No one should satisfy himself, as is the rule in the material world, but one should satisfy Krishna. So unless one satisfies Krishna, one cannot correctly observe the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Indirectly, Arjuna was advised to act as Krishna told him. Because ultimately, Krishna doesn't want Arjuna to do karma yoga, he wants him to just serve him. 49. Durena hyavaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya buddho sharanam anvicha kripana phala hetavaha. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. What is the word here? Kripana. Those who act phala hetavaha, keeping the fruit as their goal, they are called kripana. Misers. Why they are misers? Because they want to enjoy, they don't want to share. The fruit is meant for Krishna. And instead of that, they are taking. So therefore, they are misers. They do not want to give the fruit to Krishna. So there are different words that are used in this thing here. So he's encouraging him to do this. What is encouraging him to go into two things here. Buddhi yoga. He says you should do, you should act in buddhi yoga, and you should give up this avaram karma. Avaram means abominable activity. What is abominable activity?
Karma.
The karma kanda. Yes, action for sense enjoyment. That is abominable activity. Of course, Srila Prabhupada has an extreme understanding of abominable activity. What is abominable activity for Prabhupada?
Anything that is not Krishna
service. Anything but devotional service. It's all abominable. So you understand the mood of Prabhupada? You know, and he's correct in this age. There is no other path. If you want to go through the gradual elevation process in this age, you will never reach anywhere. So he says that's all abominable. Ultimately, only loving devotional service. But otherwise here, activities motivated by material desires, the activities of a kripana, these are avaram. They are abominable. So you should use your intelligence through buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga means thanks to this, by this, on the strength of buddhi yoga, linking your intelligence with the Supreme, fixed on the knowledge of the soul, then you should distinguish what is favorable and what is unfavorable, what is abominable and what is actually proper action. You should see what you are doing. Are you doing it for the right purpose? You should understand what is this avaram karma. But of course, based on this word, Arjun will become totally bewildered. What is he going to understand? What is abominable? What is abominable? What Arjun will understand when he hears this abominable?
The fighting.
The fighting? That's abominable, he would think. He will get bewildered and say, oh, but you told me to give up all abominable activities. What is abominable is to kill Bhishma, kill Drona, that's abominable. And then Krishna will have to explain the whole thing over again. This is not what I meant. Abominable is when you act self-centeredly for your own enjoyment. That is abominable. So, and killing them, that is your duty. That is good. Misers do not know how to utilize the assets of riches with which they acquire by good fortune or by hard work. One should spend all energies working in Krishna consciousness, and what will make one's and that will make one's life successful. Like misers and fortunate persons do not employ their human energy in the service of the Lord. So this is what is called in Ishopanishad the killers of the soul. So what Krishna is saying here is that we must use one's intelligence to ascertain our motive behind the actions. Whatever we do, there is always a motive behind. Why am I doing it? Why am I doing it? Why am I doing this? Am I doing it for my own benefit? Or am I doing it to please Krishna? So this question, that's what he's explaining. Use your buddhi. Use your intelligence to understand what is abominable, meaning are you doing it for your own sense enjoyment? And what is the proper action? Because there will be different results. So Krishna is urging us to understand. Plus he says something else, that giving up activities for sense gratification with the use of your intelligence what you should do, buddho sharanam amvicha, which means you should try to surrender. So he is driving Arjun towards the point of surrender. You should try to surrender. In that consciousness, surrender unto the Lord. Verse 50. Buddhi yukto jahati ha ubhe sukrita duskrite tasmad yogaya yujasva yoga karma sukha ushalam. So now from 50 to 53, we are going to hear of the fruits of Buddhi Yoga. We heard before of the characteristics of Buddhi Yoga, now we are going to hear of the results of Buddhi Yoga over several verses. And Krishna is going to tell us that these results will come when we become expert at discriminating the motive behind our activities. This is very important. Because we keep acting all day. But why? Why are we doing everything we do? So he calls this yoga karmasu kaushalam. You should become very expert at yoga. A man engaged in devotional service, which means here buddhi yukto. It's again, this is nishkam karma yoga, but ultimately it can be taken as devotional service. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad actions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. We must become expert. If we become expert, what is the first fruit of this Buddhi Yoga? Get rid of good action and bad actions. So this is not going to create reactions. It's not going to create reactions. Prabhupada says we become liberated from the chained victimization of action and reaction. Then he continues, karmajam buddhi yuktahi phalam chaktva manishinaha janma bandha vinirmukta padam gachyantanamayam. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. Okay. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries. And Prabhupada adds in little kit, by going back to Godhead. So that's why they complain about his translation. They say, it's not written here. It's not in the Sanskrit. But Prabhupada ultimately says, this is the state beyond all misery. It's going back to Godhead. So what is it that is obtained here? In 50 we heard there will be no reactions. And here, what do we hear?
Liberation.
By doing this yoga, we will attain liberation, free from birth and death. Janma bandha vinir mukta. And this liberation is characterized by padam anamayam, which means it is a position, padam. It's a situation. It's another situation from the situation where we are now. It's a situation where there are no miseries. So of course, Srila Prabhupada in his birth part, he expands on the word padam. What is this padam? Where is that? he says that he quotes this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.58, padam padam yad vipadam natecham. This is a bhavam buddhir vatsa padam param padam 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 yad vipadam natecham. So he says, for one who has accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Mukunda, or the giver of mukti, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoof footprint. Parampadam, or the place where there are no material miseries, or Vaikuntha, is his goal, not the place where there is danger at every step. So Prabhupada is advocating, you know, that we go beyond this world, not just liberation, but liberation means entrance into the spiritual world. One who understands his real constitutional position as the eternal servitor of the Lord, and thus knows the position of the personality of Godhead, engages himself in the transcendental service of the Lord. Consequently, he becomes qualified to enter into the Vaikuntha planets, where there is neither material, miserable life, nor the influence of time and death. Then, yadate moha kalilam buddhir vyatitarishyati tadagantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So, here it says, Shrutavyasya Shrutasya Cha, meaning, you will become indifferent to what has been heard and all what is to be heard. In one sense, this means you will become indifferent to the Vedas. Once you overcome the forest of delusion, means this attraction for sense gratification, once you overcome that attraction there, then you'll become indifferent to what you have heard in the Vedas. You won't care when people talk of going to the heaven. Won't mean anything to you. Before, you were very attentive. Wow, going to heaven. Wow, good idea. But once you lose this idea of sense gratification, then you won't be. And this will happen when one is situated in yoga, which is a state of existence beyond the senses and beyond the mind. So one will not anymore be attracted to the demands of the senses. And here, Shrutasya Cha, that refers to the Upanishads. So not only you will be indifferent to what the Karmakanda section promises, but you will also become indifferent to the ideas of impersonal liberation, which is quite widely promoted in the Upanishads. Prabhupada says, when a person factually understands Krishna and his relationship with Krishna, he naturally becomes completely indifferent to the rituals of fruitive activities. Prabhupada quotes this very famous example, which we talked about a few days ago. It was Madhavendrapuri. Yes, Madhavendrapuri, who bade farewell to all his duties, his routine duties. You see that he was following. He was following so many routine duties, such as prayers three times a day. What is this prayer three times a day? The Sandhya Vandana. He was chanting his Gayatri or something, so Sandhya Vandana, so he became indifferent to that. Bathing, you know, which for Brahmins is like, it's recommended for each ashram, there is a certain number of snan, you have to take one snan, two snan, three snan per day. Well, oh, you know, can't care less, forgot to take bath, you know. Demigods, forefathers, you remember six kinds of depths. You had to do the puja to the forefathers, to the demigods. He said, please excuse me. Please excuse me. Because wherever I go, I can only see Krishna. And I don't have time for all these things. I don't have time anymore. I don't have time, and not only this, but my consciousness doesn't depend on that. Like, in general, taking bath is recommended, because after taking bath, when we take bath, there is so many things happen in the body. The body is energized, and the blood circulates, and it wakes one up. No? And it also cleanses from dirt, and it has an effect on the subtle body that you feel fresh. It puts one in sattvagun. Take cold bath, hot bath. More. You go into rajogun and sense gratification. But if it's a cold bath, therefore Prabhupada said that even if we take a hot bath, we should finish with cold. So that you wake up from the dream, you know. So you take cold bath, and it puts one in goodness. And then from the platform of goodness, then we can do nice puja and shravanam, kirtanam. But for one whose mind has become fixed in yoga, he doesn't need to take bath. Because yoga is beyond goodness. So there's no need for taking bath. And no fear of sinful reactions. So Prabhupada says all these things are imperative for neophytes. But when one is fully in Krishna consciousness and is engaged in his transcendental loving service, one becomes indifferent to all these regulative principles because he has already attained perfection. Persons in Krishna consciousness transcend the limit of Shabda Brahma or the range of the Vedas and the Upanishads. And they become absorbed in what is called Bhakti Shastras. This is what we are doing. We are absorbed in the Bhakti Shastras. So it's beyond the Upanishads and it is beyond the Vedas. It's direct focus on Krishna. Krishna's words, Krishna's instructions. So this is the highest yoga that we are performing. And there was a quote about this one. The intelligent person, the devotee, does not bother much about the practices mentioned in these sections like Mona, Vrata, Shruta, Tapa, Adhyayan, Swadharma. After understanding the Supreme Lord through devotional service, such devotees are no longer interested in studies of the Vedas. Indeed, this is confirmed in the Vedas also. The Vedas say, Kimartha vayam adeshyamahe Kimartha vayam vyakshamahe. What is the use of studying so many literatures? So the Vedas also say that. What is the use of explaining them in different ways? Vayam vyakshamahe. No one needs to study any more Vedic literature, nor does anyone need to describe them by philosophical speculation. When one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead by executing devotional service, one ceases the practice of studying the Vedic literature. Elsewhere it is said, Aradito yadi haris tapasat takim. This is from the Narada Pancharatra. If one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in his service, there is no more need of severe austerities, penances, and so on. Many times Prabhupada said that you don't have to perform all these things. Just engage in Krishna's service. So easy. Just engage in Krishna's service with sincerity, with all your heart. You don't have to add anything. Prabhupada used to say, you don't have to add anything more. Just engage in Krishna's service. However, if after performing severe austerities and penances, one does not understand the Supreme Lord, such practices are useless. So the goal of all practices should be to understand Krishna. And one who has understood Krishna, just his service, that is sufficient. No need to perform any more endeavors. So this is the injunction here. We do not need to do anything more than just serve Him. Shruti vipratipanna te yadasthasyati nishchala samadhavachala buddhistada yogam avapsyasi. Okay, well, maybe, wait, I didn't finish this thing. We were looking for the results of that Buddhi Yoga. So what was the result in 52? Become indifferent. Okay. Become indifferent. Meaning no more attraction for these things. Now, one more. When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. So here, what do we have? Samadhi. This is the ultimate. Which is attained gradually here. First, no longer disturbed. Not being influenced by whatever we have heard before in the Vedas, and no attracted to material fruit, then gradually it will become, the mind will become fixed in trance. And ultimately we will attain to the divine consciousness. So this samadhi we heard, samadhi, there are different kinds of samadhi. And we are going to study this in the further chapters. There is the samadhi in Brahman, Brahman realization, that is one type of samadhi, in which this is the impersonal samadhi. So it is a state which is beyond the three gunas, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, but there is no perception of the Lord. However, there is a state of freedom from miseries, because we heard, you know, it's a state beyond the miseries. So the impersonal samadhi is there, and then there is the samadhi of the Paramatma yogis, who are actually meditating on the Paramatma. That is also a form of samadhi. And then finally, there is the samadhi of devotional service, in which the soul evolves a full-fledged spiritual body with spiritual senses through which there is a, you know, interaction with the Lord. So that is also service, I mean, samadhi in service. Prabhupada says that in his purport. To say that one is in samadhi is to say that one has fully realized Krishna consciousness. That is, one in full samadhi has realized Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So this is the highest samadhi when we come to Bhagavan. But otherwise, there are other types of lower samadhi. in Krishna consciousness, one comes directly into communion with Krishna. And thus all directions from Krishna may be understood in that transcendental state. So that's why this is the real Buddhi Yoga. That when we are completely connected with Krishna, is in service, then direct direction comes from Krishna. One is sure to achieve results by such activities and attain conclusive knowledge. One has only to carry out the orders of Krishna or his representative, the spiritual master. So this alone is going to lead us to the samadhi. And once we are in the samadhi, we will do nothing but continuing to follow those instructions. But in the conditioned state, we receive those instructions through the spiritual master, through the shastras and so on. And when samadhi is obtained, then we receive those instructions directly from the super soul. So we have been promised so many things now. Promise of samadhi. So what is Arjun going to do next? Are there any people like that? Are there any people in that transcendental consciousness? What are their symptoms? So this will be a new section. We'll be starting tomorrow. What are the symptoms of those people who are in yoga, the yogi, when he is situated in yogi? So for tomorrow you can read at least until, let's see, we still have two sections here. If we would be very fortunate, we could finish up to 72, but I don't know if it's going to happen. Yeah. Krodad Bhavati Sammoha. You read up to 63, something like this. We try to finish this. In this section, we will also hear about the, reversing. There will be explained, this very important section, the whole reversing the process of action from, like generally, we are controlled by the objects. The objects, you know, when we come in touch with the objects is felt by the senses, then the senses send a message to the mind, saying, oh, and the mind says, oh, feels good. And then the desire to have that object is there, and then the mind knocks on the higher door of the intelligence and says, can you help me get it? Can you help me? And the intelligence starts serving the mind. And so we'll learn how to reverse that thing, reverse that process, because the intelligence should not serve the mind. The mind should serve the intelligence. That's Buddhi Yoga, part of Buddhi Yoga.